It's the first Friday of the month, everybody. You know what that means, right? You do, don't you? We'll do jobs. They came out this morning. Also, the week that was. Some economic definitions as well, and a little bit of sports to top things off. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 1st of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Busy week, economy-wise. I know I say that all the time, but this time it's actually true. Jobs, gross domestic product, the Fed as well, which can only mean one thing on a Friday afternoon. 5, maybe 6 minutes of live radio to wrap things up. Catherine Rempel is with the Washington Post. Gina Smilek is with the New York Times. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Catherine, let me start with you and ask you this question about this morning's jobs report. Way better than expected, 128,000 new jobs, 3.6% on the unemployment rate. I would just like to note for the record here that I'm kind of gobsmacked that the American labor market still is showing such strength this late in the economic cycle. You?
Yeah, I think it's a good sign. Certainly, we beat expectations this past month, particularly given the fact that we had this GM strike that depressed manufacturing payrolls. So it's quite good. Again, we are in the longest expansion on record. Of course, the average number this year is below what it was last year, below what it was the year before. So, you know, we are sort of trending downward, but that may be a function of the fact that we are so late into the recovery.
Gina Smilek, let me turn to you and the other big, big thing that happened this week. The Federal Reserve met for 2 days, cut interest rates as we all expected. My very first question to you is, with this economy at full employment, labor market still going strong, market's reasonably comfortable, and corporate profits doing really nicely, thank you very much. Why does Jay Powell feel the need to make money cheaper?
Right. So, I mean, I think it's a somewhat complicated answer here. What
okay.
we're really
okay,
seeing
we've got
is
like 4 minutes left.
That the
Go.
Fed is trying to counteract a slowdown that it could happen as it deals with trade fallout and the uncertainty that's really been plaguing businesses for the last couple of months and quarters as President Trump has ramped up his trade war and then also as we've seen this global growth slowdown.
Yeah.
And so the Fed is really trying to inoculate the economy against that. And so that's what this 3-rate cut cycle has been about.
Do you think, Catherine, that let me rephrase that question. I read what Chair Powell said the other day as the Fed being ready to take a pause, assuming the economic data stays the same. Did you read that?
Yeah, that was my interpretation. I think that was the market's interpretation as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And look, there are, as we have been discussing, there are plenty of good numbers that seem incongruous with the rate cuts that we've seen so far. But we've also seen some disappointing numbers, including in the GDP report that came out this week. I mean, I guess it was better than expectations, but it was still a slowdown. We still saw a decline in business investment, now 2 quarters of decline in business investment. We do face continuing uncertainty about the trade war, continuing uncertainty about the global slowdown. So I think that Powell's approach and the Fed's approach, if we're going to sort of read the tea leaves, is to hope that those risks are at bay and that they've done what they need to do to inoculate the economy against them and hope that the trade war with China, for example, will either end or at least not continue escalating.
So fingers crossed monetary policy, basically,
right?
Right. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So Gina, you were in the room. You had a chance to ask Chair Powell a question, and you asked him what it would take for him to start thinking about or actually raising rates. Remind us what he said and then explain why it matters.
Right. So I asked what would actually force them into raising rates again, just because that's what's happened after the last couple of instances of insurance cutting cycles, which happened in 1995 and 1998. What we heard from Chair Powell is that they really aren't thinking about raising rates again in the near future. You know, he basically said that they would have to see stronger inflation to do that, that they don't expect to see stronger inflation, and that even if inflation moved up a little, what they would need to see is a substantial and a sustained higher in prices to really, really feel that they need to raise rates again.
And what's your sense, Gina? Do you think that's a coming, or is inflation going to be stuck as it has been for I can't even tell you how long now?
I think there's a really interesting question about what is going to happen with prices going forward,
yeah.
just because you haven't seen any kind of pressures that you would expect it, 3.5% or 3.6% unemployment. It seems like the Phillips curve, that relationship between a tight labor market and higher prices, has really broken down.
Yeah.
So I think open question, it will be sort of something that the Fed is watching is in the months yeah. and years ahead.
Catherine, last question to you. We got about a minute, and I will preface it by saying we got gross domestic product growth figures this week, 1.9%, a slight slowing from earlier numbers. The New York Fed came out today and said they see the fourth quarter GDP at 0.8% growth.
Yikes.
Yeah, I know. Roll that in with impeachment and the politics of the American economy, and do it in like 45 seconds. Go.
Sure. Well, look, it does not appear that we are at imminent risk of recession. So I guess that's good for the economy and probably good for Trump's political fortunes. That said, slowing economic growth and potentially even continued falling of business investment, continued slowdown within job growth, things like that, is not going to help him. You know, the economy is basically the one key thing that Trump has going for him at this point. And if people don't feel quite as buoyant as they did not so long ago, if they're worried about manufacturing, for example, looks like it's in recession, you know, particularly geographically concentrated areas of pain could especially hurt the president's political fortunes.
Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post, Gina Smilek at The New York Times. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Guy.
Thanks, Guy.
Have a nice weekend on Wall Street today. Well, let's see. The markets got the rate cut they were expecting, as we talked about, and they got today's jobs report. How do you think things went? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so as we said, 128,000 new jobs last month, way more than most guesses out there. The not great indicator today, though, was a third straight monthly report from something called the Institute for Supply Management, showing that manufacturing in this economy has contracted for the third straight month. Contracted was what they said. That word, contraction, contracted, gets used a lot, sometimes to refer to very different things, which probably explains some of the questions we have gotten from you about it. So we, in turn, asked Marketplace's Sabri Benishore to help us out.
First of all, contraction, that is not like a word in economics. That is not an official thing.
The only definition of the word contraction is in the dictionary. It's not an economic term of art.
Joe Minerick is director of economic research at the Committee for Economic Development. Contraction in the dictionary just means getting smaller, and different parts of the economy do grow and shrink without us having to hit the panic button. Gabriel Chodorow-Reich is professor of economics at Harvard.
The U.S. economy is a very dynamic economy in the sense that a lot of jobs are created and lost every month.
So, for example, today's data shows that last month, 5.8 million people lost their jobs in the U.S., but about 6 million were hired. Sectors can grow and shrink, too. The thing you got to worry about is when everywhere is contracting. There is a real official word for that, recession.
A recession really means contraction across all sectors.
GDP, the output of the whole economy, all sectors put together, if that contracts for two quarters in a row, we usually say that is a recession. The actual call, though, is made by an official committee called the National Bureau of Economic Research Business Cycle Dating Committee.
They look at measures like sales. There's an index of industrial production.
But the big factor, says Steve Blitz, chief U.S. economist at T.S. Lombard, is jobs.
Employment is really the primary definition.
If the economy's losing net jobs, that is a sign we are headed to a big contraction, a.k.a. recession. That is one big reason people obsess over the jobs report every month. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Today in the company that's already got tons of information about you is about to get a lot more. This item, Google is buying the fitness tracking company Fitbit for 2.1 billion simoleons. So there is, yes, the privacy part of this, but also just the straight-up business part of it, too. Smartwatch and fitness tracker sales are set to hit $24 billion this year, $30 billion next year. That's according to Gartner Research. And yes, the Apple Watch dominates, but with this deal, Google could be closing fast, as Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
This Google Fitbit deal means the arms race for our arms is really on, says Angelo Zeno at CFRA. More people are getting a watch or bracelet to help manage their exercise, track their sleep, even their heart rate. And that's all data companies want, especially if your smartwatch is made by the same company that makes your phone.
The ability to kind of create those healthcare features will create a lot of stickiness for these technology providers with the consumer. And that really leads to a lot more dollars out there for them.
Apple is the big target here. It makes nearly 40% of the fancy new gadgets we put on our wrists, according to Canalys. Fitbit has 24%. Google's attempts at wearables haven't really taken off. Ramon Lamas tracks mobile devices for IDC. He says Google is betting Fitbit's hardware will give it a boost.
Google has a lot of experience in terms of engineering, in terms of AI, that could help bring the entire experience forward.
Insurers, corporate wellness programs, even Medicare are using these devices to learn more about us. J.B. Silvers teaches health and finance at Case Western Reserve University. He says the concern about all of these wearable deals is
they're going to be crossing the line between advertising as a way to sell something and advertising as a way to inform people.
Google and Fitbit today said whatever they learn about our health from these gadgets won't be used to target Google ads. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Well, it doesn't matter. They don't do anything important anyway.
Politicians and the public dumping on federal workers. But first, let's do the numbers. Markets haven't yet shaken off their Halloween sugar high, or perhaps the Fed rate cut high. Dow Industrial's up 301 points today, 1.1%, 27,374. The Nasdaq gained 94 points, also 1.1%, 8386. The S&P 500 up 29 points, almost 1% there, 3,066. For the week, the Dow up 1.4%, the Nasdaq up 1.7%, the S&P 500 up 1.4%. All that Halloween candy came from somewhere, right? So here you go. Tootsie Roll Industries down 0.7% today. Hershey shaved off 2.5%, 2.5% is another way to say that. Finally, Nestle, whose brands include Kit Kat, gave back 0.25%. If you haven't seen it yet, by the way, check out our piece online about why we haven't seen any new kinds of Halloween candy in quite a while. That is, of course, at Marketplace.org. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. One hates to inject yet another note of uncertainty into the politics of the American economy right now, but sometimes one is so obliged. There are, as of today, 20 days left until the next federal budget deadline. If Congress doesn't pass a new budget, or more likely some kind of temporary spending bill, and President Trump doesn't sign it, hello, government shutdown. Again. And that, your job as a federal employee being subject to a political whim, is making it harder for government recruiters to do their jobs. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer went to a federal job fair.
More than 400 students showed up to this gym at Montgomery College in Maryland to meet government recruiters, no corporate types allowed. Even with the turmoil in Washington, The federal government has held on to its appeal. At the end of September, applications were up 2% from the year before, according to the Office of Personnel Management. The students here see the government as a good place to start a career. Catherine Lyons is studying gaming and simulation at Montgomery.
Stable is the main thing. That's what I'm looking for.
There was some concern about how another shutdown could disrupt that stability. Peter France is a recruiter at the Federal Highway Administration, looking to hire engineers and interns. France says about 10% of the students who stopped by asked about shutdowns.
So they don't want to go into something where they know maybe there could be a chance even in the next couple of weeks here that we might have something dramatic come up again.
France says students wanted to know things like which agencies usually shut down, what happens when your work gets put on hold, when do you get paid? He reassures them you don't have to wait too long for your back pay. Daphne Zamora, a freshman at Montgomery College, didn't need any reassuring. She's not worried about a shutdown, but
my mother was concerned, actually. She was like, wow, that's interesting. What's going to happen? And it's going to affect us all.
Zamora is undeterred. She's looking for an internship in law enforcement or national security. She chats with recruiters at the Coast Guard. There are dozens of federal agencies here, over at the State Department table, across from FEMA.
So what I would advise you do is you go to careers.state.gov.
Recruiter Tanya Rogers is dealing with another of the government's self-inflicted wounds. The State Department froze hiring for more than a year. Rogers told me many applicants didn't stick around waiting for the thaw, which finally came in 2018.
We have a pipeline of applicants. So when there's a stop to hiring, it throws us behind in that pipeline.
Other agencies had shorter hiring freezes, but are still struggling to recruit. It's a competitive job market. Plus, the government can't always match salaries in the private sector. And while the shutdown wasn't a top concern for the students at Montgomery, it drove some federal workers to quit.
The rhetoric surrounding shutdowns often includes people saying, well, it doesn't matter, they don't do anything important anyway.
Erica Groshen headed the Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2013 to 2017.
That's really demoralizing to these really dedicated public servants.
More federal workers started bailing out of government jobs last December as the shutdown got underway. 22,000 quit in March. It may not seem like much by federal workforce standards, but that was the most in a single month since 2010. That brain drain can affect national security. Jeff Neal spent about 30 years in government human resources departments, mostly at the Pentagon.
The Department of Defense cannot do its job without 700,000 federal employees. They're the people who buy the supplies for the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. They're the people who buy their uniforms, they buy their food, they buy their medical supplies.
Neal says the Pentagon is holding steady now with around 740,000 civilian employees, but the federal government as a whole has more workers over 60 than under 30. So without more young applicants from places like Montgomery College, the government could be left scrambling to fill vacancies as boomers retire. In Rockville, Maryland, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
A couple of days ago, the NCAA made that big announcement about college athletes that they will be allowed to, and this is the quote, benefit from the use of their name, image, and likenesses. California had already made it law. Other states were thinking about it, but there are still a whole bunch of questions about what it all means. Marketplace's Andy Euler went in search of some answers.
During her senior year at UCLA, gymnast Caitlin Ohashi posted one of her floor routines on YouTube. Before she knew it, that jubilant performance grabbed 100 million views. Just a few weeks ago, the New York Times published a video featuring Ohashi titled, "Everyone made money off my NCAA career, except me."
I was handcuffed by the NCAA rules that prevented me from deriving any benefit from my own name and likeness, regardless of the fact that after my final meet, I had no pro league to join.
She turned down a book deal and speaking engagements because she had to preserve the amateur status that allowed her to stay on scholarship.
Caitlin Ohashi was not going to go on and become a multi-million-dollar professional gymnast.
Kavitha Davidson with the sports website The Athletic.
Her successors should be able to make money off of the fact that people are paying attention to them because they're really good at a sport and they happen to be doing that sport in a college.
That argument that college players deserve a slice of the multi-billion dollar NCAA revenue pie is at the heart of the new California law. Patrick Risch teaches sports business at Washington University in St. Louis.
I honestly believe that they were not going to make this specific announcement if it weren't for the fact that the state of California had passed legislation saying that by 2023, we're going to let the athletes in our state receive name, image, and likeness endorsements.
The NCAA had to do something, but it's still unclear exactly how things are going to play out. But what the NCAA is insisting on, colleges won't be paying players directly. No way, no how. Any money players earn is going to come from the Nikes, the Under Armors, and the YouTube TVs of the world. Scott Rosner with the sports management program at Columbia University says the NCAA bent, but it didn't break, because ultimately it still gets to define what it means to be a college athlete as opposed to being a pro.
In the end, that determination of what that clear line of demarcation is to be determined by that very body, the NCAA.
Some argue this rule is only going to benefit football and men's basketball stars because those sports generate the most revenue. But Kavitha Davidson at The Athletic says you might be surprised who could cash in.
The UConn Huskies women's basketball team will have individual athletes who are going to garner more sponsorship offers than, you know, the women's basketball team would in a smaller program.
And they're more marketable than the men's team because the dominant women's team has won 11 NCAA championships. But Davidson says there will be plenty of student athletes who just aren't marketable for whatever reason. And those kids probably won't see a dime. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
A little bit more sports now alongside the tug of war between journalism and private equity that's been going on out there the last couple of years. Deadspin, the once upon a time go-to sports and culture website, is today a shell of its former self after the private equity firm that bought it this past spring went in search of a more aggressive ad policy and an edict this week telling reporters and editors to stick to sports. Top editors have left or been fired. Basically, everybody else has resigned. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more now on what happened.
Private equity firms typically buy companies with a lot of borrowed money. That means those companies need to make steady income. Donna Hittrich runs the private equity program at Columbia's Business School.
Given that the transaction, the nature of the transaction is to use leverage, one of the things that they have to think about is how that debt is going to be able to pay down.
Deadspin earns revenue for its private equity owners by slapping ads on its articles. But as Google and Facebook have gobbled up ad budgets, media analyst Ken Doctor says it's not reliable to bet on ad revenue.
To have owners who both have that kind of model in mind and also that are private equity is a model for disaster here.
Deadspin's management reportedly pushed aggressive autoplay ads because it wasn't hitting advertising targets. Deadspin's owner, Geo Media, didn't respond to our questions but has defended focusing only on sports stories. Doctor says annoying readers and angering staff is not a winning strategy.
The audience is going to go elsewhere, which will just tank the business faster.
Still, Doctor says plenty of other media companies have figured out how to rely less on ads and more on subscriptions or live events. Donna Hittrich says despite the turmoil at Deadspin, more private equity firms could see potential in media companies.
When you drill down deeper into the different types of media and you can really understand their business plans and the scalability of those plans, it can become attractive.
Later this month, shareholders for the two biggest newspaper publishers in the country, Gannett and Gatehouse Media, are voting on whether to merge. If they do, the combined company will be managed by another private equity firm. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which I have to set up by playing you this piece of audio from then-candidate Trump after he won the New Hampshire primary back in February 2016.
Don't believe those phony numbers when you hear 4.9 and 5% unemployment. The number's probably 28, 29, as high as 35. In fact, I even heard recently 42%.
I played you that so I could read you this, a tweet from now President Trump about this morning's jobs report. Quote, "Wow, a blowout jobs number just out. adjusted for revisions and the General Motors strike, 303,000. Now, remember, this morning's unemployment rate is 3.6%. The actual number of jobs this economy added last month was 128,000, not 303. Best as I can figure, what the president has done here is add the upward revisions to the August and September reports announced today. That's an additional 95,000 jobs. And what people's best guesses are about what the GM strike and temporary census workers leaving their jobs took out of this morning's report, about 80,000, give or take. He added those to the actual number to come up with 303,000. But here's the thing. You don't get to add what happened 1 or 2 months ago to the current month. You don't get to say, well, if GM hadn't been on strike, because GM was on strike. And you don't get to say, well, if temporary census workers hadn't left their jobs, because temporary census workers left their jobs. Look, this was a good and unexpectedly good jobs report. I just don't know why he has to make stuff up. Okay, that's all we got. Dow up 301 today, 1.1%. NASDAQ gained 94 points, also 1.1%. The S&P 500 up 29 points, almost 1% there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. We will see you again on Monday, all right? This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.